Welcome to Spirit Talk, where we explore the paranormal, supernatural, and weird science and technologies with your host, Fox.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we have an exciting show, a dream interview for me, actually. I've been following the work of John Hutchison and Bob Koontz for a while now, and so this is definitely a dream come true for me. Dr. Robert Koontz is a PhD, a graduate from Maryland in experimental nuclear physics, and he's been a former U.S. military intelligence member and also a National Security Agency instructor. He's also been involved with particle accelerator research out of Berkeley National Labs.
That's correct. I'm a staff scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory.
And he's been published in various scientific and technical journals. How are you doing today, Dr. Koontz?
I'm fine. Fox, doing great. It's a wonderful day out here in central Pennsylvania. I'm looking forward to talking with you about the subject. And let me just point out from the very beginning that I'm speaking as a credentialed scientist. This is not dreamland kind of mystical stuff. This is solid physics that I'll be talking about. If it's not solid, I'll tell you.
Right. Now, you've been following the works of Thomas Henry Morey for a while. Is that correct?
Dr. Morey, yeah, let me just brief on what happened to me. For 57 years, I was a conventional kind of person, but that's 37 years as working in the field of science and technology, purely 100% everything conventional, national security, particle physics, conventional, everything was conventional. And then in 2002, I photographed here in Central Pennsylvania, and this is on my website, drkoontz.com. That's D-O-C-T-O-R. KOONTZ.com. There are pictures of a UFO that I took in 2002. And these are during the day. This is a daylight photography. And so that changed me around. I started getting into the non-conventional stuff. So I started trying to understand what I photographed. And I started studying anti-gravity. And started looking at the anti-gravity that got me into free energy. And I've been doing this now for 9 years. Purely unconventional, going from a purely conventional physicist to a purely unconventional physicist. So that's where I am now. Anti-gravity, John Hutchison, boy, he's the master on this planet, as far as I know. Wow, that's not quite true anymore. But let me just mention John Hutchison's work is on my website. He's done this by himself. This is a man working alone. But the Russians, Gosha, Russian, and Godin at the Russian Academy of Sciences have replicated the Searle effect. Tremendous amount of going on this planet. Tremendous amount.
What current projects do you have going on as far as devices? I know that there was mention of you replicating or trying to replicate some of Morey's work.
Okay, I'm a little bit laid back now on the subject of what I'm doing because I have some paralysis that's setting in my left hand. And I'm having trouble doing some of the engineering myself. So I'm looking for other people, perhaps a friend of mine at the national labs and some other people can do some of the physics and that I can't do anymore. But looks like we're able to create antiparticles on the desktop. You know, a desktop system, a small antiparticle production, amount of antiparticle production on the desktop, negative mass electrons, free energy. These are all subjects that I'm working on. Let me just tell people that the engineering is very stringent on free energy. You cannot make free energy just by sopping together a system. You must do the engineering right. But you mentioned Dr. Henry Morey. Following Nikola Tesla, Dr. Henry Morey, from a period of like 1910, let's say, until 1953, he worked on free energy. One of the greatest electrical engineers this world has ever known. And he developed a system, listen to this, folks, he put out 50,000 watts of power on the desktop. Desktop system the size of a desktop computer, a little more square, but that's basically fit the description. 50,000 watts on a desktop system, and that was in 1953, but he couldn't get it patented. The patent office demanded he be able to explain where the energy is coming from, and he didn't know.
Does there have to be a full scientific explanation in order to get a patent then? Is that what you're saying?
So apparently what the case was when Dr. Morey applied for his patents in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. Now I understand his patent's gone missing from the patent office, but me to say this, that two physicists at the Russian Academy of Science, this is very important because this is a conventional physicist confirming what's called the Searle effect. I don't know if you've heard of John Searle.
Yes, I sure have. He's dealing with anti-gravity and free energy also.
Right, now, John Searle claimed to have built a UFO. He has pictures of building this UFO, or not a UFO, a disc-shaped object. He built a flying saucer that he said worked using the Searle effect. Now, the Searle effect has been confirmed at the Russian Academy of Sciences in Moscow. There's a two Russian physicists, PhD physicists, confirmed what John Searle claimed. This is what they did. They built the Searle, the guts of the Searle device. They put it on the Searle device so that it wouldn't fly away. And one of the problems is John Searle said that his first system flew to the roof, literally. So they built the system on springs and so they could measure its lift. And there's a system of neodymium magnets that are rotating. Rotated that system, got it started. Now listen to this. It's very important for your viewers. They got this thing started, and it went on its own, goes on its own. It's self-sustaining, produces 7,000 watts of power. It's a big system, weight about 350 pounds, about 700 kilograms. And it lost half its weight. It became anti-gravitic to 50%, lost 36% of its mass or weight, and it became partially anti-gravitic and produced 7,000 watts of power. This is a Russian laboratory, the finest laboratory system in Russia, and the Searle effect has been confirmed at one of the nation's best laboratories. Now, what has happened since then, I don't know. You know the thing about free energy, there's big, big money involved, and Russia is a big producer of energy. So what will happen next, I don't know. I heard the laboratory got shut, their experiment got shut down, and they were ordered not to enter the laboratory area again, things like that. Now,
do you think the Russians are more involved with this type of technology, or do you think they're just more open about it?
Well, I think that they're more involved, from what I can tell. They test, there's a guy named, his name's on the tip of my tongue, but he's a Russian billionaire, was involved in this, and he's published several papers on the, and there's something called the Avramenko plug, which is not a plug at all, it's a device that's used to detect scalar waves. And so I would say the Russians are involved in this heavily. But just like in the United States, it seems like these people kind of disappear. I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but sometimes there are such things. And also, Fox, let me tell your listeners that according to Stephen Attenborough at the Federation of American Scientists, more than 5,000 patents were classified in 2010, last year. So now what happens when a patent gets classified? And what if you're given a secrecy order by the government that you're not supposed to talk about certain things? You know, what happens to those inventions? What happens to those ideas? They could be lost forever.
Is that usually the case when you are employed by someone or a government agency, or is it also in the private sector that that happens? Because I know that is probably one of the big reasons why John Hutchinson himself had decided to be an independent researcher so that... has more freedom to divulge information, etc.
I think you're right. I think John cherishes his freedom to speak. He's the kind of guy that wants to do the best for humanity and not for himself. He's a very selfless kind of person, a tremendous individual. I've been a friend of his now for about 4 or 5 years. I knew him before that a little bit in the literature and things. And so, yes, what can happen in the government is if something is classified, can be classified for, you just get into trouble generally if you start talking about classified things. That's generally the case. Now, some things have a certain time limit, or they just become, they become time limited by the natural state of affairs in the world. For instance, I could still talk about things from 1968, space collection that might still be classified. SPACEGOL, there was an Operation SPACEGOL that run by the National Security Agency, space collection. I don't know if I could talk about that today. Even the name SPACEGOL is probably a classified code word. So I don't know. You know, these things, whether or not the government wants to prosecute you, that's another issue. But the secrecy, you know, 5,000 patents, that's a lot of patents to be classified. And what happens to these patents and these patentees? You know, they're not granted patents, apparently. What happened to their ideas? Does the government usurp them? I don't know.
Aside from the positive benefits from some of this technology, do you feel there's a legitimate reason of concern as far as potential for abuse, etc.?
Well, private individuals could develop weapons using some of these ideas. There's no doubt about it.
Do you perhaps feel that's the main reason why?
I don't know. Something a little spooky is going on with some of this classification. I don't know exactly what it is. But, you know, this idea of men in black, there may be a little something to that. Maybe a lot to it, for all I know. I don't know the inner workings of all the Blacker Than Black programs. But I just know that, Dr. Tom Brown was visited by people who, he got on video, he got on camera, and were looking in the windows of his door, of his laboratory, at the door, and also his car was working on anti-gravity, and he had visitors that said that it shut down because it was national security, they claim. That he was upsetting the economy of the Western world, almost least the United States, things like that. So I don't know. You know, these Blacker Than Black programs. Sometimes I don't know who's in charge of them, who oversees them, what reports do they report to? And also, there's Stan Meyer. Do you know about Stan Meyer's water car?
Is this a guy from the Philippines that you talked about on Coast to Coast?
That's Stan. It's Daniel Dingla. Now, Stan Meyer is an American inventor who took this water car idea to the nth degree. If you visit my website and look under patented, there's information on his car, and there's a video clip there that shows him driving his dune buggy powered solely by water. Now, there was patents issued for this. So it wasn't just an idle project. It was a big project. He really developed this tremendously. And the physics of this water car business is very developed. In fact, my claim is that we can provide all the world's energy needs with water alone through this resonant breakup. It's a special process that Stan Meyer developed. It's a resonant breakup. It's not electrolysis. You know, most people use electrolysis to break up water into hydrogen and oxygen. Now, once you get the water, hydrogen and oxygen, nobody's going to have to debate. You've got energy all you want. The difference is that Stan Meyer did this at the zero point. He didn't do it after he used energy to break hydrogen and water into hydrogen and oxygen. He did it at the zero point. And that's the beauty and the wonderfulness of Stan Meyer's system. But there is a man named Daniel Dingla in the Philippines, and there's YouTube videos on this, who claims to be able to produce similar effects.
Well, as far as the free energy technology is concerned, that's pretty old technology, to be honest with you. I mean, it's been around for a long time. The question still remains, the reason for its suppression. Is it perhaps a danger in the wrong hands once you're dealing with a potential for weaponization? Is that the main motive?
It could be partly that. It could be partly some people could claim national security on economic grounds. If it would destabilize the United States, for instance, I don't know. I do know you're right. It's been around so long, but physicists are going to say that I'm some sort of kook. You know, even though I'm talking about things that have been around a long time, most physicists tell you that free energy is impossible, and the reason being is that they don't know about negative energy states in particle physics.
Well, we all know that the education system is very outdated, too, with the new physics and the new research and discoveries and experimentation around the world. It's mostly only published in scientific journals, never makes it to the universities.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems is that we've got a tremendous amount of arrogance among scientists in this country and in the world. you know, German scientists can be pretty arrogant, and American scientists can be pretty arrogant. They won't talk with me very quite often unless I, if I inch them up front talking about energy, they'll slam the door in my face. Now, the problem here is that most physicists don't know that it is possible to make negative energy. That's the problem. Most physicists don't know that. They didn't really understand the work of Paul Dirac, who introduced negative mass electrons in the 1930s, which led to antiparticles. Now, antiparticles are a big deal in particle physics, right? Antiparticles, wow, is that strange. Particles that destroy each other. The antiparticle for an electron is the positron. And then the antiparticle for the proton is antiproton. Now, normally, you need a multi-billion-dollar, a $17 billion particle accelerator to make antiproton. But I claim you can make it from the desktop, and I'm hoping to be able to get a friend of mine to look at it and see if I'm right.
I think that's another thing, Dr. Kuntz, is that perhaps it's not so much the suppression, it's more of the lack of funding that's going into this research. I've heard you mention on a show that John Hutchinson should have $1 million lab, and I totally agree. Yeah. I think you should have $1 million lab, doctor. I think it's the lack of funding that does...
It could be, and also, it could be lack of funding. That could be part of the problem. I've certainly knocked a big chunk out of my life savings while you're engaging in this project since the last 9 or 10 years, and, you know, it's a certain point where I reach the end of what I can do. It could be lack of funding. That could be a point. And also, the real reason there's lack of funding is that there is so much discrimination against, if you will, press for free energy. Physicists like Michio Kaku, who I respect, he's a bright physicist, but he misrepresents physics. He makes it sound like string theory is accepted universally by physicists all over the planet, when that's not true. String theory is just a theory, his theory. And he makes it sound like his theory is the theory. And he says that free energy is impossible. But if he considered, he changes his position now. Now that there is some evidence that there are negative energy states for particles. But it also gets back to Darwinism. And I'm not a fan of Darwinism. Now listen, please, people out there, understand, I'm not talking about Christian fundamentalism, but there's different kinds of evolution we can have. What about non-random evolution? Why does it have to be random? Everything, the whole universe. Is this beautiful universe all based in chaos? You know, isn't there a hidden order at the base of existence that appeals to our sense of poetry? The lovely clouds we see on a beautiful day like today, or the sunshine, the way that harmony. Why can't we have symphonic evolution? Why do we have to have Darwinian evolution? Even if you're not introducing the idea of a god or a creator, that doesn't mean you can't have other kinds of evolution. So, as soon as I say non-Darwinian evolution, on any publication, people just jump on me like crazy. You know, it's because they have a certain fixed, a narrow view, and they're not going to change. Darwinian evolution is the answer, and it's a cult. And so we have a kind of cult, and not exactly a cult, but we don't understand or lack it. Some people suffer because they have lack of knowledge, and also because of the arrogance of people. You know, they'll call me all kinds of names. They'll call me every name imaginable just because I mentioned free energy. They know nothing about me as a person, but suddenly I'm a demon, you know.
Well, most great discoveries are ridiculed in the beginning, Doctor.
Yeah, you're right, Fox. You're right. Most discoveries are ridiculed, and then they're accepted, and eventually it's just said it was obvious from the beginning. I knew it all along. The guys right. That ridicule you, you know? Well, listen, let me just say this. You know, let's suppose you have a zero point. Let's define a zero point of mathematics as zero. If you add one to that system, well, it's no longer a zero point. You've mysteriously come up with one. But if you add another very quickly, add another minus one at the same time, one minus one is zero. You're still at the zero point. Now, what if you extract the one and let the minus one go off in the opposite direction? You're still at the zero point. You've conserved energy. You conserve momentum because you're going opposite direction. You've got plus one and minus one equals zero. You've got one unit of energy, and you've conserved the energy of the system. So there's as simple as that you can get. 1 minus 1 equals 0. That's an example of an energy point process that conserves energy and momentum.
In our line of research, Doctor, we encounter a lot of reports of shadow beings. They seem to be interdimensional beings, perhaps some like to look at them as either demons or daemons or djinn.
Yeah.
Or,
okay.
Do you think they're made of dark energy?
Dark energy, that's interesting. The way that I believe dark energy is made is through canceling electromagnetic fields. So what I did, and if you go to my website, there's dark energy be created in the laboratory. You'll see on there these coils that I set up where I put the current flowing in the opposite directions in the coil so that I canceling magnetic field. Now, what I produced was the effect of the whole house filled with this sort of glowing ectoplasmic energy. And numerous people have seen it, and I've photographed outside the house, and it appears to make holes in the clouds.
Do you mind getting into the technical aspects of it a little bit?
I can do that.
Okay. Because I know John Hutchison has also encountered these beings, these plasma beings, in some of his experiments. Can you get into a little bit of the array as far as your technical setup?
Yeah. Okay. If you go to my website, drkoontz.com, 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 you'll see a link there that right, it says, can dark energy be produced in the laboratory? And if you go there, you'll see that there's a system I set up where it's a piece of paneling that's upside down on my bed where there's a coil running around the outside of it. And that's those are actually bifiller coils, bifiller coils, two wires. They go, and the coils are moving, the coils from one direction are coiling in another direction, or the current's flowing through the opposite direction. It's canceling electromagnetic fields. That's the secret. That's the secret of the physics. Canceling electromagnetic fields. Conventional physics does not address the issue of what happens when you have canceling electromagnetic energies.
Well, I think that's the portal, per se, for these higher dimensions, because in our world of duality, we have negative, we have positive, we have light and dark. But when you go beyond the world or the dimension of duality, you all of a sudden are in a greater unified field.
Yeah.
And so I can
see... Well, that's the basis of my unified field theory is that I'm working on now in conjunction with this scalar physics. It's all about, as you say, unified field. When you get into the canceling electromagnetic field, that introduces what are called gauge transformations. And that introduces a change of gauge is something that most physicists don't deal with. They deal with the Lorentz gauge and the transverse gauge, two gauges, favorite gauges of physics. But there are gauges beyond the Lorentz gauge. There are gauges beyond the transverse gauge. And those, I haven't named them yet. There may be an infinite number of them. I don't know. But some of these gauges, they're non-Lorentzian. They're non-transverse, non-Lorentzian gauges. Particle physicists don't deal with them. They deal with the invariant Lorentz gauge of physics. So this is non-Lorentzian. You know, Lorentz was came about time of Einstein. I lived at about the same time. Lorentz was a famous physicist of that era, and he did a lot of work that was in association with relativity. So this is all special relativity. Now, special relativity doesn't deal with forces. People don't understand that. People had adapted Einsteinian physics, special relativity. But special relativity is it's a Lorentzian kind of super system with no forces. Doesn't even deal with canceling forces.
Are you familiar with the works of Dr. William Tiller?
Oh, no, I'm not.
I'm going to read you a short paragraph from a book called The Intention Experiment by Lynn MacTaggart, and she's got a lot of William Tiller's work documented.
Yeah.
And reading from the book, it says, somehow in these charged spaces, he and his colleague managed to create an SU2 gauge space where electric and magnetic monopoles coexisted, similar to the reality supposedly present in supersymmetry state of exotic physics. In these conditioned spaces, the very law about the proportion of magnetic force had altered. A basic property of physics had completely changed. The only way to get such a polarity effect was to produce some element of the SU2 gauge symmetry. When you're talking of gauge transformation, is that what you're...
Yeah, right. SU2, Special Unitary Group 2, two-dimensional. Well, that's a group. SU2 is SU3, there's SU4, and there are all these symmetry groups that come about mathematical... when you mathematize the physics, it leads to certain views of space and time. It's... And the same way as the Lorentz group, and that area, people have talked about Minkowski space. Minkowski, which is a Euclidean kind of geometry, non-Euclidean geometry, but it's Lorentzian in nature. We're talking about, when you're talking about canceling electromagnetic waves, symmetries other than the conventional symmetries, you're talking about non-Lorentzian, you're talking about these topologies of space-time, where you might have these creatures or these entities or dark forces that you're talking about, or light forces too. I wouldn't just think of this. So, yes, now when you talk about this portal, that's exactly what my little invention, if you will, my bifilar coil looks like. It looks like a flat portal into another dimension. And that's what some people claim that it is. I don't know exactly. I do know that there was this, at times there was some sort of beings, or I shouldn't say beings, self-regenerating energy that came out of it. And it interacts with itself, self-interacting energy. Now, that's a little different than blind forces and random mutations. You imagine creating an energy that's intelligent.
Can you be a little more descriptive on how it looks? You've related it to plasma. Is that correct?
Right, yeah, exactly. Like an ectoplasmic, like a ghost, okay? Imagine you seeing a ghost-like image. It's sort of an amorphous cloud of plasmonic or plasmatic energy that's sort of floating around there, just sort of sitting in the room that you're in. And it's not doing much of anything, but it has some properties that it self-organizes into... Or maybe you can project your own consciousness into the energy field and cause the consciousness to take on a particular form. It may be a zero-point energy system that can easily be changed. You know, a zero-point is, there's nothing to it. It's zero. And it's something to it. It's not exactly what we're familiar with. And so it can easily change and modify itself and take on various forms. You know, we don't understand zero. We don't understand the vacuum, the zero point of the vacuum, and a tremendous amount that's going on at the zero. That's where everything, I believe, happens, at the zero point. I believe at the zero point you can make negative mass electron with a positive mass positron. That's negative mass and positive mass. That cancels. Negative charge, positive charge. It cancels. And,
Would you say that the main colors of this ectoplasmic being, would you say was a grayish-bluish tint?
Yes, I would say. That's what I see with my eyes in my laboratory when I have these coils operating and I have high voltage at the same time.
That's very interesting, Doctor, because it reminds me of the reports by Wilhelm Reich, or Reich, I should say, with his experiments with orgone.
Orgone energy, yeah. Yeah, he was put in prison, I believe.
Would you say that this is living, conscious life force energy, the zero point? Would you relate that to that?
I would say it's possible. I don't know. It seems to me that that could be what we're dealing with here. Life force energy, zero point, life point, your description is reasonable to me. Now, whether or not that's exactly it, I don't know. But it's in that, that's a good description, in my opinion, of what I seem to sense.
Let me share with you some of the results I've seen in some repeatable experiments that I've done personally.
Okay.
There is some instrument based on Wilhelm Reich's technology back in the 30s or 40s that is actually used to measure orgone. We acquired one of those about 2 years ago and have done some very interesting experiments. One in particular that comes to mind is that, in this case, it was just a very simple plasma ball, which is a small Tesla coil in essence. It seems like the life force field goes down on the meter, but then when you pump life force, it uses the electromagnetic field like an antenna so that it goes up. Really interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds intriguing. These kind of things, now, once you get into plasma balls and things like that, you're getting into something that's on the realm of being outside of standard particle physics. Most physicists would probably say, oh, it's easily understood. But that's not conventional physics, and that's not necessarily the case. Look what John Hutchinson's done. You know, his laboratory is from Seoul. He's working to the duplicate his work in Germany. All John Hutchinson's experimental work effort has gone to Germany, except for him. Now, they're going to need him to get it working.
Do you know if John Hutchinson has made his design schematics for his non-sparking Tesla coil public, or is that something that...
No, he hasn't. John is not good at documenting. John is he's not a mathematical kind of guy, and he's not good at documenting. His written English is not too good. But this guy has got the brains. He has a psychic, or I don't know if he's the word psychic, but intuitive understanding of physics like nobody I've ever known, at least in the realm of... or he's working. He is going to, you know, he worked and worked with this stuff for 30 years. And also, when he builds a piece of equipment, he follows, like, Tesla. When he builds a Tesla coil, he builds a real Tesla coil. He doesn't build come on, an idea of a Tesla coil. He goes to the original source, and he finds out what Tesla used, what kind of wax he used, what kind of, oil he used, things like that. He replicates it exactly. People don't do that, and they make a mistake because there are dielectric resonances. You know, there's a difference between castor oil and plumbing oil, or oil that you get for your car, NW30.
I think the unique thing about John himself is also that he uses a lot of old military spec equipment not normally accessible to most independent researchers or experimenters.
Exactly right. John uses old... World War II equipment very often, and a lot of that stuff was built by engineers prior to the solid state revolution. Where they couldn't use a diode, didn't have diodes of high voltage or high current diodes, and they didn't have magnetic switching diodes. So the electronics was much different in that era. And so, you know, people think they understand physics. Listen, okay, I studied physics all my adult life, right? Not about the degrees and all that. I don't understand physics. And you get into non-Lorentzian gauge. When you get into gauges that are different than transverse gauge, most physicists use the transverse gauge. That's because it simplifies the mathematics. But the simplifying in mathematics doesn't make it right, you know. Or the Lorentz gauge, that simplifies the mathematics the next step. Most physicists use that. Very few physicists use anything other than the Lorentz gauge. Okay, but there's much physics beyond the Lorentz gauge. That's the topology of a flat space-time. Yeah, and you talk about curved space-time, you're talking about non-Lorentzian.
So you're saying that the more you've learned throughout this time, the less you understood the whole concept.
That's it. I suspect that an infinite amount to learn. I believe that it goes on forever.
Well, the good thing, Doctor... is that you have a whole eternity to figure it out.
Yeah,
this is certainly not the end. We see that every day when we talk to spirit beings on the other side. And
yeah, and also I have not talked to any. Well, I don't know if I've talked to any spirit beings or not. I'm certainly not going to say that anything you're saying is wrong, just because I haven't experienced it myself. You know, there is a tremendous amount, like I say, an infinite number to learn. Now, this comes back to things like alien implants. Dr. Roger Lear, a friend of mine, a very good scientist, a very, very good scientist. I put him up against many of these physicists who talk to say all of this extraterrestrial business is nonsense. Okay, there's one to say it's nonsense. I have a very good friend of mine who had an object removed from his body. He woke up one morning and found blood on his pillow. And, you know, that's pretty unusual. That wakes you up right away when you find blood on your pillow. Well, he got it checked out very carefully, but Dr. Roger Lear eventually had an implant removed, and he had it tested at one of the world's best laboratories. And guess what? Non-terrestrial isotope ratios all the way. That thing was not from this solar system. So when you're talking about scientists that are being abducted from their homes in the middle of the night through walls, We're talking about a kind of physics that most physicists don't know anything about. Oh, let me tell you this. You want to hear something? You want to break some news? Well, you know, all these physicists tell you about the Big Bang, right? That was 13.7 billion years ago.
Right.
Well, suppose there was no Big Bang. They don't know. It's a theory. It's based on theoretical analysis. They're saying that the universe is expanding, and that causes light from galaxies to redshift. But light can be redshifted due to gravitational attraction of the light to the photon. When it leaves the galaxy and it comes towards us, it's always losing energy because of the gravitational effects. So there could be gravitational redshift, and there is gravitational redshift. And my friend of mine, a very good expert in general relativity, shows that all of the redshift, more or less, is due to gravitational redshift, that the universe isn't expanding, wasn't a Big Bang.
What is your take on black holes, Doctor?
Well, I certainly do believe there are such things as black holes, that Einstein's general theory of relativity predicts it. But black holes cause light to redshift, too. You know, well, light leaves a black hole, it redshifts. But anyhow, if you just stick with the Big Bang, who says the Big Bang happened 15.77 billion years ago? That's a theory. It's based on theory. There was no one here. We didn't observe it. We haven't been around 15 points. It's based on theoretical analysis, and they wrongly concluded that there's only one explanation, that it has to be the universe is expanding. But the universe probably isn't expanding. I don't know for certain. I'm still in the throes of working on that for myself. It looks to me, based on my friend's analysis, that at very least there's another theory, that the universe wasn't created in an infinite, in a Big Bang, but has always existed and is infinite.
Infinity doesn't expand, Doctor. It just is.
No. Well, that's about all you can say about existence. It just is. Well, if you think about it, nothing makes sense about existence. There shouldn't be anything. If you think about it logically, pure logic, there shouldn't be nothing. There shouldn't be an electron or a proton. There shouldn't be a sun or stars or sky. There should be nothing. That would make sense. A universe with nothing in it. Okay, but now we have a universe that has a lot of stuff in it. So something is. It just is. You can't say he is that he is, or she is that it is, or it is that it is. Whatever it is. You know? And so the existence of existence says something about existence, and it is. And it can't necessarily change it just because you have ideas that aren't consistent with the nature of existence.
Do you feel this grand portion of the universe that's in a state of dark energy and dark matter are actually potentially higher dimensions that are not visible to us, but are therefore in a state of black matter because we can't see them from our third-dimensional reality?
It could be a zero-point porthole into you know, white space or a dark space, or it could be a topological porthole into all kinds of different realms of existence that I know nothing about.
Do you ascribe to the wormhole, white hole theory, or do you have other?
I don't know. Ever since I came to the conclusion that the universe might not have been created in a Big Bang, I've changed my view of what I know. I don't know much about anything now. They talk about the Big Bang as if it's an absolute certainty. There could be white holes and it could be wormholes, and people have these theories. But if the universe is infinite and eternal, has always existed, then surely the civilizations out there that are pretty old, and they might have much different physics than we do. And they may be taking scientists out of their bedrooms in the middle of the night and putting implants in them. Or they may be flying over our skies, and like whatever I saw in 2002 and photographed numerous photographs on my website. You know, people say UFOs are nonsense. Well, I don't think that goes very far with a guy like me. I mean, look, after what I've been through and what I've experienced and what I've seen, and that's a simple-minded, arrogant, Darwinian theory. It doesn't go very far.
What other paranormal experiences have you had?
Well, I've had two other ones. I wouldn't call any of those experiences I had paranormal. They were normal for me. I don't know, but I've had two other experiences that I don't feel free to talk about, but one of them was extremely traumatic. That happened outside of my normal physics realm. extremely interesting. Maybe someday I'll be able to talk with you about it, but right now it would be best if I didn't talk about it. But it convinced me of the existence, higher realm of existence, sure, for sure. Some sort of intelligence on a higher realm, let me say that.
Interesting.
Well, it's a fascinating universe. You know, I tell you, it's a shame what they do to the kids in our educational system. You know, they teach them Darwinian evolution as a fact of evolution. Well, listen, you know, give me something with more meat on it. You know, Darwin wrote it down on a piece of paper, three lines, blind forces, random mutation, and natural selection. Is that it? Is that the nature of existence? You don't need anything. You don't need any computers, any electronics, any mathematics. There's nothing to it. And you know, they teach kids that life is purposeless. Well, what's that all about? How do we know? How do they know that life is purposeless? Like I said, I've been studying physics now for, I don't know, 30, 40 years, and I don't really understand it all that much. You know, people would joke and say, yeah, you talk, you know, well, that's not true. I mean, I studied, and I've got good credentials. I graduated with a bachelor's degree with honors. I earned a PhD in nuclear physics at a good laboratory, a good university. I was a staff scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory, where 9 Nobel Prizes have been won. You know, and I published in standard scientific journals. So the thing is, the universe is a lot more complicated than we understand. There's much more going on. There's infinite, I think there's an infinite amount going on. Certainly some of it is on the spiritual domain, which is what you're exploring. You know? Now, we'd encourage you.
It certainly is, Doctor.
Yeah, well, let's assume the universe is infinitely old and an infinite in extent, too. There could be all kinds of every creature imaginable running around.
There is an unlimited amount of variety in the spiritual world, just as much as there is in the physical. There is.
Oh, yeah.
So much. It's a world full of life and consciousness. Mm-hmm. And they're more involved in our everyday life than you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting when you start looking into it, how much interaction there is from these high realms into our world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let me just summarize that there's a tremendous amount out there. Science is unlimited as far as I'm concerned. And these non-Lorentzian domains of existence and the pathways, my website is a good place to start, Free Energy. And if anybody wants to help John Hutchison or help me or help us in any way you can, I appreciate it. And I thank you very much, Fox. It's a great interviewer. You're an intelligent young man. I assume you're young. And I enjoyed talking with you.
Likewise. Thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure and a privilege, Doctor, for having you on tonight with us here on Spirit Talk. You have a great day.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. 4-time coast-to-coast guest, experimental nuclear physicist Dr. Robert Kuntz. You can find out more about his and John Hutchinson's work at drkuntz.com, along with information about the topics discussed on this segment of Spirit Talk. This is your host, Fox, signing off until next time. And remember, free your mind, think free energy.